And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, my little Marty McFlies are open. As you all know, I had a time machine that I won in a Parcheesi match with Dr. Barking Mad Werewolf of Dr. Barking Mad Werewolf Science Fiction and Horror Theater. I've been taking trips back to the 80s, mostly to play the lottery, pick up some cheap He-Man toys that I can sell on eBay, and stock up on my favorite pairs of jams, because I go through jams at an alarming rate. Anyway, this time I get back to 1983 and the time machine lit up like a Tesla in a rainstorm and now I'm stuck. Yeah, I figure no problem, I just go back to the old vault. Kill the Chris Keeper and take his place, and I'm back home, and things are the same. Then I remember the time that the Chris Keeper from the future came back and tried to kill me, and I decapitated him with a shovel. So this time, I just snuck in when he was out and poisoned his jolt cola. So here I am, back home. What? How are you hearing this? Well, I've just kept this recording for the last 40 years or so. But, what? Why is the recording quality so good for 1983? You ask too many questions. Just watch the movie. It's called, Totally Killer. And it will be made in like 40 years or something. I don't know.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am your co-host this evening, Mr. Luke Giaconetti. I'm already too deep, and I drove awesome. And I'm here tonight with two of your usual freaks. Left to right across your podcast dial, you heard him there. That is my brother, Mr. Jason Giaconetti.
Remember, avoid the knife, keep your life.
Good advice. Yeah. And rounding out our crew, Two True Freaks OG, Chris Honeywell.
I can't say the same about you, losers. Hit the showers.
The other one I had is, why did they even put these in the variety pack?
So, my other one was very simple. I don't know who are people using fucking time travel. I know she doesn't say it like that, but it's just was funny.
Absolutely. So if you can't tell
my backup one was watching. This is an active crime scene. Nobody move.
Actually,
as someone from the 80s, that scene was exactly right. I've seen that scene before.
Yeah. The thing is, I always have to come up with a couple because I never know people are you like. So then I add, of course.
Yeah, we snipe like crazy, so.
Yeah. Old people, sick people, and people with dogs. That's your order of people you hate. That's the order you hate people in? Yep.
It's a good list.
It's good. That's a good order. It's a good order. So anyway.
If you can't figure it out from this point, folks, we are taking a look. And I say this all the time, but who can't be topical? Because we are taking a look at the brand new horror film currently streaming on Amazon Prime. We're taking a look at Totally Killer, which is sort of like, I guess, Prom Night meets Back to the Future. I guess it'd be the best way to describe this movie because it is a. I saw the trailer for this originally. I think it was on Bloody Disgusting, and they had said, "Oh, it's a horror comedy." I'm like, "Well, that doesn't work a lot these days, right?" And I watched the trailer, and I'm like, "This actually looks funny and legit a slasher movie. I'll give it a shot."
Yeah. Yeah, so this is a Blumhouse production at its core. and Amazon picked it up, of course. So, you know, I think at some point there, you got to kind of like, you know, think about it. So if Amazon's picking it up, they're paying for the, this was not supposed to be an Amazon original. Blumhouse had put this, and it just got bought through. Amazon was buying up everything they could because there was nothing, there were no movies. So, you know, you know, you got to make sure you got to kind of get things if you need to have your movies kind of thing. And,
well,
and Amazon,
and you know, and we
do pretty well with this stuff.
Yeah. And I don't want to make a pun, but we've been burned before with some of these ones that go direct to streaming. I'm looking at you, remake of Firestarter. Okay. But this one,
the remake of Firestarter was not supposed to go straight to streaming. That was supposed to go to theaters. But
I'm saying time makes fools of us all. Okay. At least in that situation,
this one would have been fun in a theater, I think. I think this would be fun with an audience.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, and the thing is that, so I ended up watching this with my wife just because of timing, and she's not big on horror, but she'll watch some stuff. And even she was getting into this. The part where, you know, she asks Jamie, who's our main character, asks the question, you know, hey, If I screw this up and my parents don't get together, am I going to like fade away like Marty McFly?
Yeah.
And I think her friend's mom, right? It's Lauren, right? It's like, oh no, you're not going to fade away. It's not magic. You'll just go back and there'll be no life for you. Cause no one will ever know who you are. You won't have existed. Hey, right. Save me a seat at lunch. You know, So it's like it. And so that popped my wife, right? Because she's like, really? I feel much better. Thank you so much. So it does, I think, a good job of balancing the horror aspects with being actually pretty funny as a fish out of water time travel comedy. Yeah. Right. And it did what seems like that said to me is that, OK, this we complain. I don't say complain. We freestyle on this show a fair amount that. This movie is geek show. That movie is geek show. This movie is mainstream. That movie is not. This one seems to appeal to a fairly broad audience, right? Because there's some geek show stuff in here. There's a few touches in this that to me is like somebody watched this other movie and they're making a subtle narrative reference to it. But then there's broad stuff like that, which plays to the dates, right? The dates or the spouses that are watching this movie. And, you know, weren't necessarily their first choice. And that, so I thought did a good job of that. And I don't want to say it's one of those four, what do they call them? The four quadrants, a four quad movie, but it certainly does a good job of at least expanding the audience a little bit to get more people interested.
This definitely could be a bunch, like if it gets some play over the years, it could be a good entry into slasher movies or horror movies for people who aren't into them, you know. It's a nice nice little mix of both things.
They
got a lot of stuff right in this movie, I thought, you know. Movie it was good. I really liked it. It didn't blow me out of the water. But the way they made it was what made it special. I think they really, like, they didn't go overboard on the 80s-ness of it. It isn't packed full of licensed songs and super crazy. Like, I graduated high school in 1986, and this is set in 1987. And the set dressing is perfect. It's perfect. Mm. It's like, it really looks like the late 80s. Without it being like a parody of the late 80s with everybody wearing, you know, shoulder pads and, you know, those like Florida ocean colored clothes and stuff, you know, pastel clothes and stuff. There's a little of that.
The Miami Vice look.
Yeah.
Now there is, I did want to ask you, Chris, because I knew, like I said, I knew this was your era for being in high school and Jay and I came, you know, we were later on being
like
in high school.
Yeah. A decade lapse in there.
The one that jumped out to me as being an anachronism, and maybe I'm mistaken. So Jamie goes to the school, they give her a schedule and say go, which I thought was funny. Yeah. And they send her to PE. And the girls are wearing like the little bloomer shorts and the t-shirts. That one I think is right, because I remember the short, the girls wearing the shorts, but the boys are wearing long shorts.
Yeah, I would if they're wearing long shirts, they got to be what we call jams in those days.
Right.
And they have to be sort of the jams. They're almost like swimsuits, you know. They were that.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. And Jay, I think you know where I'm going with this is because we did have jams because we had family in Florida, so we got them ahead of the curve in New York. But you know, before the Fab Five, right? You didn't wear long shorts for athletics. You wore shorts.
No, they would have had shorts almost identical to the girl shorts, really. Like,
right.
We didn't have a uniform at school that they gave us for gym, but we had to wear, you know, certain kinds of shorts and stuff. And that's what it ended at. Like when she goes, I feel like we're all at Hooters, you know, that I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what it was like.
but that was the one thing from like a anachronistic standpoint that stood out to me. It's like, and it's real brief, and it doesn't really play, it plays no role, because we only see the boys basically finishing PE before the girls come and play PE, right? And so you only see it for a couple of seconds, but that stood out to me. It's like, they should be wearing short shorts, right? But beyond that, leaving that aside, you know, I agree, because sometimes you get this idea that you watch a movie that's set in the 80s and they just saturate it. Like, everyone's walking around like they're on an episode of Miami Vice.
The Wonder Woman sequel was like that. Every place looks like a mall.
As much as I like Wonder Woman 1984, that first sequence in the 80s overdoes it too much. The rest of it does better. The one in the mall is a bit...
Well, I think they did it on purpose in that movie. I think she was trying to go for a little more of a, like, non-reality with that movie. I think she was going more, you know,
was trying to be like an early 80s pre-crisis Wonder Woman comic, so it was a little nuts anyway, but here I think it does a good job of actually being of setting itself in the 80s, and what that also allows it to do is it allows it visually to look like an 80s slasher movie. The way that people dressed, the way that sets are decorated, like you said, the way the school looks, the way the cabin looks, the way the midway, right? It looks like various other 80s slasher films that we've seen. And I do got to say, the killer, I'm assuming that has to be like a Max Headroom sort of thing, right? All I could think of was that that was that Signal Intrusion event. I think it was in Illinois where they hijacked the Doctor Who episode to get the guy doing the weird stuff. So it looks, I can't, again, I was, when this movie is taking place, I was 7, so it's like I can't speak too much to it. I don't know about the authenticity, but it's certainly sincere, and I will give it points for sincerity, right?
No, whoever wrote this really had a feel for, and it's funny, before I saw the day before I saw this movie, I saw a couple podcasters talking about, or you know, a podcaster talking about, I just watched this movie, and someone goes, is it any good? And he goes, yeah, but get ready for, you know, like a lot of jokes about how things are problematic if you can stand that. And it's like, no, that would, you know, I was like, that would be part of it, you know, like I don't know why he was getting grumpy about that, because when I look back at the 80s, I go, oh well, we would have got away with that today. So, you know, like the character of the girl being like, oh, unwanted touch and stuff like that.
Yes,
that would be accurate. You know, you don't have to like it, but it's pretty accurate to.
Well, you know, that's our colleague, the hero, was unable to join us. He is under the weather. He's on the physically unable to perform list for this episode.
He's got the rock and roll fever and the boogie woogie flu.
I hear he's got also a case of the white line fever going on too. Ooh. Right. And he can't get enough of you, but anyway, I will say this. Okay. I do want to give Hero a shout out. He said this on our chat. He said every teenager should go back to the 80s and get toughened up. So I think what we now see, it's the two sides of that coin, right? Because Chris, you said the one side is that you look back at it and say, yeah, that wouldn't fly. We can't do that anymore, right? But Hero, who's a little, Hero's your age, isn't he, Jay? I think he's, because Hero's a little older than I am.
I don't know. I graduated '96. You graduated '98. He might be right in the middle.
So he's around our age, right? So Hero takes it from the opposite tack. It's like, toughen up, Snowflake. So it's like somewhere in the truth may lie somewhere in the middle may lie the truth. I think also your mileage may vary on that situation
it's also a double-edged sword. There's like she was also noticing that there were things that were awesome about the 80s. which was just like you were pretty much like free to do almost whatever you wanted because there wasn't the infrastructure to like when she's like hands the cops the blood and I'm like I got their DNA and they're just like okay whatever dude. I love the cops in this. These are some giallo cops. These are some Italian killer movie cops. Yeah, just completely ineffectual, but friendly.
Well, the thing is that, not just to hand her his head, she's like, look, she goes, I know you can't tell me because it's like, you know, personal information, but I need to see this person. And she's like, science 120. It's like those things, but that's how things used to be.
Oh yeah.
Like, and the problem is this movie is not Mitsuo. So your director is, she was born, I want to be either 73 or 76. One of your writers was born in 78. One of your writers was born in 76. Like these people are in their early to their mid to late 40s, right? Maybe early 50s. Everyone who directed and wrote and like all the people, that kind of stuff, that's their age. So they are probably a little young. They probably weren't teenagers or they weren't 16 in 1987, but they grew up with 80s movies and then into the 90s and stuff. And they remember how things used to be. So like, Those type of things are when you start looking, So when you start looking at like those things in the movie, it makes sense because we all know that's how things used to be. Like, you know, like to walk into like this, you can't just walk into a school now. Like there's no fucking way you're walking into a school ever. We literally had they stop the photographer. They know who's coming, who has an ID. They won't let him in until I say, yes, I even though I've told him he's coming, they won't let him in. You know what I'm saying? So like, that she's able to walk in, no paperwork. No one ever asked you for anything. They're like, yeah, sure. I guess you're who you are. But who would lie? You're from, you know,
who would lie? She says that at the midway. She's like, you can't get in a car with you. You're a complete stranger. You could be a serial killer. It's like, honey, would a serial killer wear Gloria Vanderbilt?
Okay. Right, that's what I'm saying. So I want to just mention this because someone's going to bring this up. I'm not saying you guys, but someone's going to bring this up because God forbid they don't. This movie, when we saw the trailer for this, the first thing I said is, I think I've seen this movie, and I said to, because Haley watched the trailer with me, she goes, Dad, I think we've seen this. I said, I think we have too. And a lot of people said that when they saw this trailer because they said, I saw this movie in 2015 called The Final Girls. But, and I have seen The Final Girls, it's actually really good. This movie in The Final Girls, people said it's the exact same thing. Well, what they are doing is they are misremembering. They're Mandela affecting. See how I tied it into this movie? They're Mandela. Although no one's memory got erased. Final Girls, the girl wants to save her mom. Her and her friends get sucked into the 80s slasher movie and they live in the 80s. They don't even go back in time. They are in the 80s slasher movie.
They're in the movie, right? Yeah,
the movie itself, which it's actually for that movie should have not been any good at all. It's actually really funny, and it's actually a pretty good slasher movie too. And things, you know, it's very much 1980s slasher movie. What happened was when they announced this, Todd Strauss Schulson, who is the director of The Final Girls. He came out and said, I think I've made this movie already. And people are like, and all of a sudden people started a lot of negative backlash and whatever towards Blumhouse. Because how dare you make the exact same movie again, but it's not the same movie. So some of the things that we got with The Final Girls was you were now in a slasher movie, right? And things you're confined to the boundaries of the movie itself, right? And that's part of the idea that the movie's only so big, there is no world outside of you. where this is like back, let's just like Back to the Future. You're now back in that time. That world exists. You're now in a time travel. Having everything there, excuse me, you can see the, obviously, you know, they kind of signpost certain things. But for those of us who are watching carefully, it's pretty easy to pick up on a lot of things as you go along. They're like, okay, I know this is going. I knew where a lot of things were going. I'm sure there are some people who are completely clueless watching this because either they don't know their time travel movies, they don't know their horror movies, or they're maybe not fully paying attention. You know what I'm saying?
Well, let me jump in for 1 second. So
sure,
when
sure.
when they're in the Dahlgrid, the Dolphin, the Dahlhaus of Horror, which would make
terrifying.
Charles Band is furiously taking notes right now. Let's just say that when he hears Dahlhaus of Horror. But anyway, so when they kill the Sweet 16 killer, right?
Yeah.
They all gang up on him and they kill him and they reveal him. And then they're all talking and they're talking about the whole thing about Fat Trish and, you know, all that stuff. And then the killer comes up and gets the last remaining girl, right?
Yeah.
Gets, I don't remember which one it is. It's Kara, right? I think it's Kara's the last one. Okay. Yeah. My wife freaking jumped out because I knew somebody that she had to come and die because I said, this can't be the end of the story, right? Yep. And how it's framed and where she's standing, right? It's yep. like she still has to die. So somebody's got to kill her. And this is how they're going to do it when they're showing us her directly, you know, yep. broadsided to the camera like this. They're going to have her get killed like that. So again, I think you're right on the money. It can appeal to different audiences. As a Geek Show audience, I know what's coming, right? Yep. My wife is not the Geek Show audience. She's surprised by that, right?
Yeah.
The jump scare kill works on that member of the audience. So I think you're on a good point here. So,
but I'm saying that jump scare kill also has literally the part where I laughed out loud. I laughed so hard. Yes. Because what happens? What if they slit her throat before she can press the button? And what happens? They slit her throat, and then she presses the button. I was like, that is so perfect because you signposted it's going to happen, and everyone doesn't no one thinking about it. But I'm like, please, please have her get killed and then press the button. And as soon as she presses it after her throat gets slit, I'm like, of course. I was like, that is so funny. The only thing, I'll be honest here, is the one who's playing the sheriff's daughter, right? The police officer's daughter who becomes a police officer, right? I know she's too old for it, but why did I feel that Awkwafina should have been playing that role? I'm just saying.
It's been fantastic.
That woman's, again, channeling her inner Awkwafina. I love Awkwafina. I think she's hysterical. But like, I'm looking at her going, God, that would have been so funny if they were supposed to be like in college, because then you could totally pull it off. I'm like, that role was made for Awkwafina, but she's just a little too old to believe that she's 16. Yeah. Right. But
so I was like, friend Mick do that, huh?
But that's what I'm saying. It's so funny because the guy who plays her dad in the movie, some people might know him from Young Rock. Some might know him from his roles in the Marvel movies. Like that, he's a comedian. But well, like
the thing is, so her dad is played by Randall Park, right?
Yeah, right.
So here's the odd thing. Okay, so the director of this film is Nachanka Khan. Okay. Yep. And she was the creator of the series Fresh Off the Boat, which is the show that Randall Park went through on. So I thought it was great that she brought back Randall Park and used him in a bit where, again, he gets to play a sort of similar character to who he was on Fresh Off the Boat, in that he is a, you know, he's a very well, you know, he's well-meaning, he does the right thing, but he also is, you know, kind of just, does things whatever he feels like sometimes too. So I did like that. I like that callback because when I saw the trailer for it, I saw Nanacha Khan and I'm like, what the hell do I know that name from? And I had to like look it up. And as soon as it's all Fresh Off the Boat, I'm like, well, of course it's Fresh Off the Boat. I watched that show for years. So,
but even Fresh Off the Boat is a perfect example of like, I mean, I know it's telling, what's his face? who's the guy. I forgot, the chef, right? Isn't he a chef? Yeah. Right? I forget his name.
Yes, he's a chef, and I'm blanking on his name as well. Yes.
Yeah. But it tells his story. But when you watch,
it's anyone.
Okay. So yeah. So we watch Fresh Off the Boat. It's exactly like it's spot on to like the 90s, because that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be the mid to well the not mid 90s. Yeah, mid 90s, right? I mean, it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah, it's like 90, 90, 94, 95. They talk about Shaq Fu a lot and yeah, Shaquille O'Neal, you know.
Right. So I'm saying, to be a period piece, it makes perfect sense. The one thing I can say is this, though. Having watched a lot of times we've all seen, definitely the three of us have definitely seen plenty of 80s, you know, the Sweet 16 Candles and, you know, Say Anything, all those other movies, right? This obviously was kind of poking a little fun at those kind of movies as well, but not complete wink, wink, you know, let's make fun of it kind of thing. But it kind of was having a little fun, especially with the Mollies, the idea of them being that instead of the Heathers or, you know, whatever, like kind of thing. Like, but the one thing that it did do is that it kind of played up that aspect of it that make it work well in that kind of comedy. Whereas if you watch Stranger Things, which takes place in the 80s, it's not a comedy. It's kind of much more, again, we're supposed to believe all this stuff's really happening, but it's more grounded in like realistic looking things. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you watch 16 Candles, that doesn't look like anyone's life. You know, kind of thing. But
yeah, it's not that still, I knew anyway.
I'm saying, but it's still enough. You're still like, oh, okay, I understand, right? Or like Say Anything, or like oh crap, I'm blanking on the other ones. You know what I'm saying? But like, or the
Breakfast Club.
Like that, like, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and whether or not you believe that the Breakfast Club is actually just Ali Sheedy's entire neuroses just played out in front of her. You know, but that's another story for another day. But like, you look at all those things, like those movies had enough, they were generic and yet kind of like played it up a little so that it wasn't just regular everyday stuff. But at the same time, you weren't getting Valley Girl, right? You know, where like, oh my God, chuck me with a spoon even, you know, kind of like all that stuff. I mean, there are girls who talked like that 100% in California, especially in California, right? But like, it was enough where it could be, you still kind of like, oh, okay, I get it. Like it's kind of like poking at it a little bit, but it certainly wasn't going to give you gritty, real 1980s kind of stuff. I mean, if you want that kind of stuff, you watch different movies back in the day.
The set dressing and stuff like that, I thought was like 100% like realistic. Like, when she first gets out of the time machine and is in the carnival looking around, I was just like, wow, they did it. Because there were still some people there who were still dressed. There's still people who dress like that. And it wasn't just like outrageously 80s. Everybody didn't have feathered hair and everything.
Right.
It looked like a real carnival in the 80s. You know, it looked like looked like a real high school group of kids just wandering around. And I mean, I was impressed with that stuff more than any. I think they lost a big opportunity. They should have really looked up Huey Lewis and said, "Can you do a song for the end credits of this?" Would have been perfect. Yeah. I like how they acknowledge the existence of Back to the Future, and it's even kind of a reverse Back to the Future where like her dad was a big, you know, was like a jock sort of popular guy, and then she's, you know, got to get him back to being a wimp, and it's like a sort of reverse Back to the Future where she's really fighting to keep her parents apart for a little while. So I thought that was too soon.
You'll fuck it up.
There's deep conspiracy theory cuts in this too. Well, they update time travel into quantum physics where they're like, no, it'll just be a different timeline. You won't disappear. There isn't just one timeline, you know? And I was like, okay, good. We're updating that. Now we don't have to deal with that in a time travel movie. I'm glad we don't have to think about that. But then they had another thing, and this is a deep dive. Have you ever, either of you guys ever heard of John Titor?
No,
I have
it
not.
Was an internet thing where he was supposedly, he was a guy who would show up on news groups, and he was a time traveler from the, you know, 23rd century, and he'd come back to the late 90s, or it was like actually the early aughts. He came back to look for a certain old computer because there was a chip on it that they needed in the future that they couldn't make or something like that. So he came back to our time period to find one of those computers. And, you know, he would go out, he would do like ask me anythings. And I think they were sort of referencing that with they had to have like a video game or some sort of piece of electronics to do the time travel. And I thought that was a kind of cool. I think they're referencing John Titor here, which is up to the date time travel stuff. My laugh out loud moment. I had one like just, you know, unexpected laugh out loud, and that was during the television, the news broadcast when they pan over and there's a kid with the nunchucks.
Oh, that one.
And he's got his nunchucks and his knives all laid out. And I'm like, oh, my God, we had a kid like that. Every high school had that kid. Ours was called Kung Fu Lou. And his name wasn't even Lou, but somebody called him Kung Fu Lou at a party and it stuck. And he was always doing his nunchucks. And the only thing that they missed was they should have had a couple people with butterfly knives. I saw somebody on one of the social medias going like, you know, butterfly knives were sort of our fidget spinners in the 80s. And I'm like, yes, they certainly were, actually.
Yeah. Oh, man. The
just, can we also just acknowledge what a great movie last name Dubasage is? I swear to God, they took the word douchebag and like rearranged it a little bit, anagrammed it a little bit for Dubasage.
Yeah. Dubasage. And you know, my first note under the title, it just says podcasters are the worst. I mean, I think we can all agree with that. Podcasters are all a bunch of fucking assholes. I think everybody would agree with that.
Podcasters are, I mean, look at the first Halloween remake.
Yes, so between this and Halloween 2018, it's like we're finally catching on to what a bunch of useless, mouth-breathing morons all podcasters everywhere are. I mean, Jesus.
We do live in a world of shit.
I'm just saying is, you don't see all of us running around trying to, you know, make murder murder podcasts, even though they're the most popular ones in the entire world. Well, that's the thing. I'll be honest with you. Think about this, right?
I did. I like the burger shop too. That was with the the podcast. That was pretty funny.
So I'm just for those of us, you know, those you're saying like, oh, well, you're poking fun of yourself. Like none of us are running around doing murder podcasts because those are like, this is just aside from the movie.
No, we're two true freaks. We're the cool podcasters, guys.
Well, no, cool. That's such a strong word.
Maybe in that
was chilly outside. Yeah. Fuck that shit. Here comes Mongo. Anyway, so what I'm saying is like, it's disturbing as hell when you look at, like, I'm not kidding. Like, I mean, except for like some famous people's podcasts, the most like that the podcasts that have the most listeners are like true crime and like the murder ones and whatever. And then the same shit on Netflix, like the documentaries about like serial killers and fucking like all that stuff that gets so many more eyes on it. And you're just like
fruit. It's easy. Cause you have a story. It's basically one of those things. If you're a good storyteller, or you have a, you know, you can drip out the, it's a, you know, a crime story. So you can drip out the clues and you can tell the story and keep all the twists till it, but, you know, wait till part five when you find out who really blah, blah, blah. And it's, I mean, the thing about modern podcasts and streaming and stuff is nobody wants to do any work. nobody wants to do research and stuff. So you can go get a true crime story. There's millions of books of them, and then you just sort of adapt it into your, you know, and it's people love Death and Carnage. And it's, I think it's kind of the fucking, now I'm spacing on that movie that we hate. We all hate.
Hereditary.
It's the Hereditary effect where you get to where you get to like, be like, ooh, explore horrific things and stuff like that. But you don't have to dirty your hand with fake horror movies. You can go for, you know, people can, you know, indulge that side of their, I like, honestly, though, I trust people like us not to turn out to be serial killers, despite all the fucking insanely sick movies we've seen. I'm always more suspicious of the people who would never be caught dead seeing a horror movie, but like true crime as being like,
yeah,
maybe having, yeah, a few bodies in the basement, you know, it's a different, it's like born more of repression. Maybe, you know, I'm a bored housewife and this movie,
I'm reminded a bit, Chris, on the album Dragontown, Alice Cooper has a song called Sex, Death and Money. Right.
Yeah.
And it's the gospel here in Dragontown, right? And he talks about the singer in the song says that they accidentally found themselves in a nudie show, and they sat for 2 hours, and they were so offended, they were so shocked.
Yep.
Right. As they, yep, sat for 2 hours, right? It's that same type of idea, is that the you know, it's like, oh, well, I would never you know, watch that trash like that, but oh, I'm gonna here in South Carolina, we had a true crime story. It was down at the coast. It was a super rich family, and the supposedly the kid killed the stepmom or something. I didn't follow any of it, but it was like huge news here. And so the people that are obsessing over every detail of this are the same ones that are going to talk, that are going to, you know, claim there's a lack of morality in our current generation, are going to claim, you know, start a moral panic of that sort of thing. Whereas those of us that, you know, can appreciate and understand the meaning of horror as fiction are less likely to believe moral panic or something like that. And so I think you're on the money with that.
Yeah, it's like when you meet death metal musicians and like people who are into extreme music, and they're the mellowest, like, yeah, nice, you know, they're sitting there with their cat in their lap, just like Pookie Pie, you know, in their real life, you know, and then they're on stage like,
well, you know, because metalheads can work out their aggression by listening to music.
Yeah.
And yeah, then
they got an outlet for it, you know, and that's where it goes into the land of pretend. Whereas, like, you know, I think some of these housewives are thinking, like, looking at their husband going like, yeah, maybe you belong in the backyard. I'm learning how to avoid all the mistakes everybody else made.
Yeah, she's been listening to that Dixie Chicks album over and over again, you know. Goodbye, yeah. Earl.
Yeah. That would be a great movie.
Who
is just some
topical
guy
who's like 22 years late to the party here.
He's missing. That's another he's missing. You know, he's not noticing his wife's listening to true crime. That's another thing I loved about this movie, is you had the total like stereotype school shooter in it. And everybody was just like, ah, he's fine.
Yeah.
And he was. They're like, yeah, his sister's debt was dead, but he took it in stride. You know, he was still, you know, he still hung out, you know, and
I did like that, too. It's like, you can't call someone Fat Trish. Like, well, we can't now because she's dead.
Yeah. That's the thing, is they just don't understand anything about bullying. It's just like, they're just, yeah, like, what do you mean? You know, yeah. the one jock character which I think it was brilliant that they made him the black guy, because then they got the opportunity to dress him up like the real, like, black guy that would have been in the 80s, who was kind of douche. He's got a little Fresh Prince, you know,
yeah,
air about, you know, with his haircut and stuff. And just that, like, when he just chucks her out the door, that burps at her, I was, yeah, like, I've seen this happen. She's not even offended. She's just in disbelief, and like that everybody else is just like, yeah.
Well, I like also, because by making the jock guy, who's also a bit of a bully, the black guy, he gets to bully the other black character.
the other male character, which I think is hilarious, right? Because all I could, because it's almost like in Not Another Teen Movie, right? When they're doing the bit on Not Another Teen Movie where they're poking fun at Can't Hardly Wait, and it's the big house party. And the one black guy is there, and he goes, "Hey, man, I'm the black guy at this party." It's like, "Oh, shit, man. Okay, sorry. Catch you later, bro." And he walks out. Can only have one character, right? But here it's like, okay, maybe there was more than just the one token dude, right? Maybe back in the actual 80s.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, though, too, is, you know, obviously they have... So, and again, we don't know exactly where this movie takes place. Kind of thing, because it's clearly warm enough at Halloween where it's not like, you know, I mean, it wasn't like, obviously, you know, it wasn't snow or anything on the ground, but it's like, it's supposed to be kind of innocuous where it is and obviously whatever. But depending on where you lived, your high school was not that diverse. There was a lot of diversity here. So I'm just saying some of us, went
not literally a small town high school like that. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. There was a lot of diversity, even in the friends group. There was a lot of diversity in there that might not have always been the case in, especially in the 1980s. And that's the probably the nicest way to say that. But like, I wish I was kidding. Like, you know,
but we could, I guess we could, it's theoretically possible that there could be a town in there. Maybe they have a factory that, like, over the years has drawn people from other countries to work there or something in the Midwest, you know?
What I'm saying is, but, like, the diversity within the friend group.
Oh, yeah.
Very much nowadays kind of movie.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, look at 80s slasher movies, right? And, like look at Friday the 13th, the original Friday the 13th.
Right. Pretty tame by today's standards. So right. I couldn't
resist. Yeah. People were way easier to scare back then, I guess. But
well,
I'm saying
they didn't have any lunchroom scenes. That's where you can establish that clearly, because lunchroom was always like, you know, there were the metalheads in that corner over there, and there were the poor kids over there.
Even in the gym class, there was a lot of diversity in that gym class, too. I'm just saying is that's something that nowadays we would 100% have to have in a movie, because if you had a movie about current day and there's not diversity everywhere, even if there's not really diversity, like I'm going to try to say this and as nice to play way as possible, the high school in which I teach at is not that diverse,
right?
But
right,
ask people, you say, is it diverse? Like, oh yes, of course it is. That doesn't mean that we do not have Latinos and Asians and, you know, like African-Americans. If we do, we have them all in the, but it's not as diverse as this is making, like literally outside of having like some quote unquote, like some straight up stereotypical things happening here. The diversity here in this small group of friends was really, I don't want to say wrong. Cause it's,
But it would be fair to say it's anachronistic, that it's reflecting, it's doing what this movie is doing, right? It's reflexively looking at the values and morals of 40 years ago, and that just stuck in my fucking throat as I said it, with today, right? But it's right. I think part of it is that's anachronistic, but also part of it, again, look at a lot of slasher movies. You have a sort of forced diversity there, right, to get a cast of different looking people sometimes that all get killed in fabulous ways, right? Wait, so sometimes you do that also.
But I'm saying later ones did. Because when you look at Halloween.
Later ones did,
Think about it. Halloween, like, every person's white in that movie.
Well, but it is also central Illinois, right? So that's pretty accurate.
But it's supposed to be the middle of Illinois, right? So, yeah. It may, and I'm not saying that you couldn't have people of color in these movies, but I'm saying, but like, it would ring at, in 1978, if you were watching Halloween and you're saying like, huh, there's a lot of different people from a lot of different ethnic groups here. Like that would strike you as weird because it didn't look right. But like,
well, no, nobody in 1978 was saying, Jesus Christ, everybody in Halloween is white. Every single character is white in this movie. No critic said that, no person analyzing the movie, and college professors,
no,
viewers, just regular cinema goers. Nobody said that. It was just the status quo.
But when you watch the original Friday the 13th, there's all the counselors are white. And again, I'm not trying to like make this a race thing, but I'm just saying is like, but it didn't ring as untrue. But then what happens is then you get into like the sequels of those, and they're like, we can't just keep rehashing the same thing. So they start trying to diversify it. They get a kid in the wheelchair. Now you start getting. Yes. I tell you right now. Okay, so.
Well, to be honest, Texas Chainsaw Massacre was ahead of the curve on that.
Yes. Yes.
So I got to tell this story. So it was right after I got out of college, right? I started doing what was called Horror Festicon. And we've talked about Horror Festicon here before, where I would get four movies, all that had a theme that sort of made sense to me. And I would expose all my friends to these movies that had never seen a lot of them, because I was like the vanguard for getting my friends into horror. And so one time we watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And when it's Franklin, isn't it? The guy in the wheelchair.
Yeah.
When he is rolling down the hill, my friend Matt said, "I should have gone to Mikey for the brakes." Stop flying funny to me.
I tell
also,
you.
Also, I'm just thinking also now, if it was my high school and my high school was that diverse, which it wasn't, but we did have some diversity, and we had a couple Asian kids, there was a kid from South Korea that went to our school. We had at the most, we had three black kids. We'd had people from Pakistan. We had several people from Pakistan and stuff like that. And most of those people ended up in I had a really eclectic friends group, and like I ended up friends with almost all of those guys. But you couldn't have any of those guys in the room without any sort, without the fact that like my friend from Pakistan was Muslim, so everybody was like, hey, let's trick him and like see if he'll eat one of our ham, like get him take a bite of the ham sandwich. everybody was very aware of people who were, everybody white and of other races were very aware of it, and it became like points of humor, or it was probably the other people were rolling their eyes inwardly a little bit because the white people have to keep bringing it up and stuff, but that's what it was like, and if that diverse friend group existed in my high school, there would have been some really like politically incorrect jokes in the movie that they probably didn't even want to go there because they just had a story to tell.
but at the end of the day, this movie is supposed to still be a commercially like mainstream movie, right? Yeah. So you have to cut certain things out. I get that.
I was surprised at how violent it was. Super violent for a horror movie, but for a commercial movie, I was like, "Ooh, there's some stabbing in here."
you can get away with that stuff nowadays. Like Scream has literally, and that's what I thought about this movie, is like when Scream was mainstream. Scream was a mainstream movie. Wes Craven put this thing, whatever, right? Killing now in movies the way that's done here, because this is not Maniac. This is not, this is not supposed to be real and guttural and whatever. Like he's stabbing her he's stabbing people to death, but it sounds like the stabs in Scream. Like it does. It looks like when Jada Pinkett Smith gets stabbed in the bathroom, kind of thing. Like, oh, sorry. Spoiler alert. The movie's almost 40 years old. Get over yourself. Kind of thing. Things like that happen, but it wasn't like, I don't know. He's not gutting them. This isn't supposed to be some like horrific thing we're watching. It's not, kind of thing. He might be stabbing them 16 times, but like, okay. But it wasn't like done. There was blood hit the wall, but it wasn't like gore and visceral and ripping their throats out and whatever. Like, you know, it could, I mean, that's never going to be in those kind of films. But if you watch the newer.
Yeah, they were gags, basically.
Right. If you watch the newer Scream movies, they kind of, like, they have a lot of killing in them too. And those things are 100% commercial. Because nowadays, that part of it, that's okay. Because even though they're quote unquote slasher movies, they're not like slasher movies could be, you know, because when you go back and look at the 80s slasher movies that we love because we grew up on them kind of thing, they're not quite as violent as they were led to believe. You know what I'm saying? Like we were led to believe they were so much worse, but they were never that violent. Go back and watch. This is what the disturbing part is. When you go back and watch Maniac, right, 1980, there's no punches pulled in that whole movie. Now, is some of the blood not great? Is some of the when he's scalping her, you don't really kind of believe he is. But there's not a punch pulled in that whole thing. Or like Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, that's not a fun movie. That's not an enjoyable time. Right. I mean, and I like both those movies. I like Maniac more than I like Henry, the Church of Serial Killer. But like, they're not enjoyable. Let's just pop it on, have a good time and watch it. Right.
No. They're
supposed to push you. They're supposed to make you feel uncomfortable. It's like when Cronenberg makes a movie, it's not supposed to be mainstream and fun. It's supposed to make you feel disgusting and gross. And
yeah.
Question, what the fuck am I even doing myself? You know what I'm saying?
My body is gross.
Yeah. It's like, ew, how'd that come out of me? But that's where pee comes out. I gotta say this though before I go on. The whole idea that she goes, oh, I've had too many BJs, and I'm like, I don't remember anyone ever calling Bartles and James BJs.
No.
Yes. That's hysterical because she's like, oh my god. I don't do blowjobs. That's where pee comes out. And I'm like, oh my God, in today's day and age where literally girls are willing to blow people for like just on a first date. But I was like, that rings true right there.
Yep.
That girls were not just sucking dick in the 80s. That 100% rang true. I'm like, they nailed that perfectly. Cause there's, I don't know when that thing.
I mean, the 80s were infamously the hand job decade.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I feel like, again, from Not Another Teen Movie, Lacey Charbet, well, I'm not going to blow you. I'll give you, I'm not going to sleep with you. I'll give you a hand job, right? Kind of thing. Like, but that's what I'm saying is like, there's not that, that was 100% spot on.
In the 50s were the decade of the hand job with a white glove on, like in Animal House.
Anyway, all I know is that
it's classy.
Somewhere after like, the year 2000,
you got to level with me. Do I make this dress white or hussy white? Okay. Hussy white. You make it white except the gloves. Okay. That's what we need to do.
So what I'm saying is at some point after the year 2000, when I got out of college, right. And grad school and all that stuff, right. Sometime after I left college and grad school and all that stuff in the early 2000s, a turn happened, right. A turn happened. That those of us who grew up in the 80s and 90s are like, fuck, are you fucking kidding me? Like, what the hell? But now we got to deal with a lot of other bullshit. Like, nowadays, there's a lot of the bullshit going on you got to deal with. So you're like, well, I kind of wasn't so bad back then because even though I didn't drink or do drugs, there were people like kind of like, you know, it's just different kind of, there was different things where you're like, man. So
I idealize the 80s, but this movie does get it right with it's like, yeah, the 80s were the no blowjobs and shitty weed.
Oh, my God.
I love that gag because it was fairly accurate. But if you did eat a pound of 80s dirt weed, you would be pretty stoned. But I like the fact that she was just like, no, this doesn't even affect me. And the one girl was like, hey, that's my stash. That was a very 80s moment, like somebody with like a little baggie full of the worst weed in the world, like guarding it with their life.
Right. But I thought that was funny too, though, too. Right. You think about it, because it's such a throwaway little line in the when they're going to the concert. She's like, you have gummy? I have gummies, you know, kind of thing. Like, it's such a thing now that we don't even think about it anymore. Like, I wish I was kidding. Like, but it's not even like, it's something that, like, to think that you have, like, high level, like, super strong, like, you know, weed in gummies or in some kind of edible. Like, that was not, that's nowadays, that's not something you would like, oh, well, that seems really weird. That's so commonplace now. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She baked a whole pound of weed into a batch of brownies, but that they're all eating them, but there's not that many brownies gone. So she said she had five. I'm not thinking she had five full size brownies. They must've been small size because there's still a lot of brownies left in that tray. Right. But when she got out of the car, she goes, I brought brownies. And I'm like, they're pot brownies. They got to be pot brownies. I know they yes. have to, because yeah, that's yeah. exactly where my mind goes nowadays.
That but was the only way you could eat pot in those days. That was the only yeah. way that ever, unless you were some weird, like, San Francisco drug dealer millionaire or something who had, like, yeah. your chef, your pot yeah. chef or whatever. But yeah, but also the 80s were the time where everybody would eat a little corner of a pot of a shitty pot brownie, and then they'd all and then you would see everybody like being really stoned and be like, could they actually be really stoned, or are they just, you know, I'd seen in high school, I've seen a lot of people who've smoked, like, people have rolled up, you know, like oregano and smoked it with other people so they could watch the other people be like, I'm so wasted, and like act like a fool. And it's like, they just smoked a little oregano. That's all, you know? So
see, I always think of like, if you gave marijuana to like Charles Bronson, it's like, I don't think this stuff's working. You know, I'm not dealing anything. This is what you guys get all excited about.
But I mean, all in all, this is really one of the best, like, harket, like, in an age where we have a lot of 80s nostalgia. This one really, like, I think it hits it better than it probably hit the realism of like the 50s with Back to the Future. I think this one was a little, I mean, it hits this tone where like horror comedies are so rare that I'm trying to think of like other horror comedies to compare it to, but they either fall into like the like Scary Movie where it's a total airplane farce. Or then it's like American Werewolf in London, which is still a little more grounded in reality. And the only movie I could really think of is, have you guys ever seen Club Dread?
Yeah.
By the yes. Broken Lizard people. Yeah. It was sort of like that, where that was a legit slasher whodunit. But at the same time, it was a fairly, you know, fairly straightforward comedy, you know. And but when it got down to like the killer plot, it kept the tension up, and that's the closest I can think of to compare this one to, although this one isn't as like wildly R-rated as that one. But
I don't know. I mean, I can see the connection there. I think this one, I didn't particularly like Club Dread. I remember watching it and thinking, okay, you know, it was fine. I didn't think it was as good as the other stuff that outfit had done. So, but
it bears up really well under repeated viewings. It's one of those movies. Because that's how I saw it in the movie theater, and I was like, oh, well, that's a step down from their first movie. And then you know, you pick, there's a lot of stuff that's like, you don't pick up the first time, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
But I will say, I mean, as far as this being a horror comedy, I think you're right. It works well, and it serves both masters, right? So it does a good job addressing both sides of that equation.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't, there are parts, like I said, that we've talked about and that are legitimately funny, but then there's also parts that work as a straight slasher movie.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's aspects of it that both work well. It's not perfect by any chance, but I think especially being on Amazon Prime, where you get some folks together, you get a case of your favorite beverage, you know, and you just, it's a fun movie with a crowd
because it plays to both of those genres, which are typically fun with a crowd, right? So I think it serves it. I think it accomplishes what I believe it sets out to achieve, right? I don't think it's trying to reinvent the wheel anything here, but I'll give you for instance, there's another movie that I think may have already come out, but it was just due out, called It's a Wonderful Knife, where it is a horror version of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yep.
So it's one of those things that does what it says on the tin, right? And I think Totally Killer does what it says on the tin, right? Mm-hmm. It accomplishes the stated goals.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. So It's a Wonderful Knife is coming out. It's set to release. Actually, they pushed it back. They're saying December 22nd. It was actually supposed to come out Thanksgiving. It's coming out right at Christmas. That's what they're saying for official release of it. So.
Oh, got to come out at Christmas. That's perfect.
No, but I'm saying, but it was supposed to come out. I think what happened was when Thanksgiving actually was going right to theaters, I think this got pushed. I'm not saying it's that you can't see it, but it seems like the official release is not there. I'm just looking. It says official release date December 22nd, 2023. But people obviously have seen it because there's already, what do you call, already had an opening weekend. Where did people see it? Son of a bee. I'm looking.
I don't know the answer to that one, man. So.
Yeah. So.
It might be one of those things where they put it on 24 screens to, just in case.
Get an official. Yeah. I'm just saying this. So it doesn't have any. Country of origin, United Kingdom, United States and Canada. I mean, those seem pretty innocuous together. It's not like, your Hunter from the Future, which had, what was that, Spanish? I remember. Luke
knows Spanish, Italian, you know.
Yeah. And like, or something else is like, what? Like, how does that even all work together? Anyway, so. There's that one. I mean, it's. The problem is horror comedies to me. They mean, my favorite horror comedy of all time is still Shaun of the Dead. I mean, it just works. It's just such a good movie overall. It's a very funny comedy, but it's probably one of the best zombie movies made. But as for
that's up there with American Werewolf in London with me too. The two, like, those are the two best, I think, ever, is most successful.
Yeah, because they're not straight comedies. But they're definitely horror movies. You can watch Shaun of the Dead as a zombie movie, and you're laughing at the situation, but it's not like, you know, there's nothing zany going on.
Right. Yeah.
It's just the absurdity of the situation that his life is how mundane his life is, that he doesn't even, like, he's just walking to the shop and doesn't even realize that the same walk he's made every single day. Now there's people running in the street, there's fire, there's dead bodies, there's whatever. You're like, how are you not seeing this? But that's what I'm saying, is by making it that way. But that's not this type of movie, because this is also playing to this slasher movie and stuff like that. It's hard to make a slasher movie, a throwback, quote unquote, throwback slasher movie, that doesn't kind of like get, I don't want to say cheesy, but you know what I'm saying? It just kind of falls in that same rut. You know what I'm saying? Like, because people who lived in the 80s and made those movies in the 80s, like the Steve Miners of the world and stuff like that, they're not making those movies anymore, you know? And the people who grew up loving them and idolizing them, you know, kind of, I don't want to say look at them with rose-colored glasses, but you kind of like distort what's there, you know? I can say this, though. I can be honest. If I think about something, the horror comedy, Luke's definitely seen, I don't know if you've seen the whole movie, but Santa's Sleigh with Goldberg, he plays the demon Santa Claus. The opening scene of that whole thing is some of the best horror comedy ever. He's
one of the best horror comedy sequences ever put in onto film. Yes.
It's just so funny. And at the same time, it's so brutal.
Brutal, yes. The same word was popping into my head, yes.
Where he burns Fran Drescher's whole, he burns all her hair off and stuff. Or James Caan's trying to pull the carving knife and fork, get him out of his hands. What I'm saying is,
he's still got that jolliness to it, which makes it even more, like, insane.
I mean, the fact that it's, 295-pound Jewish man playing Santa Claus is not lost on anybody. Anyway, so, but yeah, no, I mean, again, so again, this movie is very accessible. Luke said this before. It's accessible to people who are not horror fans. I mean, the girls didn't watch me. The girls were actually out. Haley had volunteering this morning, and Kelly took her to volunteer. So I watched it during that time, and I was like, they actually would have liked this. Haley would have liked this movie. She wouldn't have gotten all the references to the 80s, because even though she's seen some 80s movies, it's harder. We have to explain to her some things, because again, at the same time, she's, you know, just turned 13. So the 80s are just an old thing to her. It's music on, you know, on channel 8,
yeah,
in the car, it's whatever, you know, but she would understand those kind of things, because she literally, some of her favorite movies are Happy Death Day and Happy Death Day to You. If you haven't seen those, that's not really time travel. That's stuck in a loop, but she loves those kind of things. Like the craziness of, like, when you do one thing, it changes the whole thing. Like, it's supposed to work this way, but it doesn't. You have to go back and fix it. Like, she enjoys that. It's not dumb, like, to the point where you're like, oh God, I can't believe I'm sitting here watching this. You laugh. If your people are the right age, you've already got a built-in audience with people who are our age, because we either, you know, you remember the 80s, you know, kind of thing. You remember all the John Hughes movies. That's part of what your youth is. So, and you remember a time when there was no blowjobs, and there was just, you know, kind of,
the time before blowjobs.
Yeah.
That was a good cartoon too. The Land Before Blowjobs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I don't want to forget to mention this little touch that I thought was great of not paying for licensed music. That's very 80s, is when she goes into her room and turns on her punk rock music, and it's just some, like, generic punk rock, like, quote unquote punk rock song that they made for the movie. And it's just, yeah, some sort of, you know, just generic. I always love that in any movie where they're like, yeah, we're not, I'm going to get my friend's band to do a punk rock song.
Well, you know, I will say
songs on there, though.
There were a few.
They could have really leaned into the 80s soundtrack if they wanted to pay for that with this, and like gotten themselves like a little Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack of 80s music or whatever. But they just it was very tastefully done.
I'm just saying, but you want a Guardians of the Galaxy, you need Disney money.
Disney just owns all those songs anyway, probably, manner.
Yeah, I'm saying they bought out Michael Jackson's estate. They own everything now. So, okay.
Well, you know, the thing is, I will say this, is that there's two things about this film I haven't had a chance to bring up that I do want to mention. So one thing, this film does evoke my crap movie weapon of choice. When the guy starts fighting with a fire poker, you know you're watching a crap movie when a guy breaks out the fire poker. And secondly, I've said this many times before on this very podcast, and I am sure I will say it many times in the future, but nail guns do not work that way.
Yes.
No.
And I will simply leave it at that. Thank you very much. The other thing I did want to say, one of the things that I said is that there's a few things in this movie that make me think that the creators were kind of actively calling back narratively to other things. So I literally said this to my wife as we're watching this and it's unfolding, and we get to the last reel, and I said, okay, it's a Tenebrae situation that we find ourselves in here.
Yes.
Yes.
And my wife, she's like, it is kind of like a Tenebrae situation. So first off, props to my wife for remembering Tenebrae, which I'm sure she hasn't seen since we were in college. Right. But yeah, it's like, and the thing is that I was thinking that the entire time, it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would the timing change? And it's like, okay, I'm thinking in the back of my head, I bet you this is going to be like Tenebrae. Because you're already changing everything around anyway, right? And then as soon as you put, you know, the podcasting asshole with her friend and the two characters are alone, I'm like, well, of course it's. And again, props to my wife. She called it was the podcaster because she also knows podcasters are like the scum of the earth. So, yep. You know, she knew the guy was bad news from the start. So
that I did want to say that is anytime it's weird the things like that that pop up, right? You know, and to call back to something like that where you have something that doesn't make sense as far as motivation and it's clearly two people, that to me has to call back to Tenebrae because it's like the opposite of Scream, where Scream has two people that have the same motivation. And so things that seem to be continuity errors make more sense if there's two people, whereas in Tenebrae, it's exactly like he says in the movie, right? It's like someone that's dead should be alive, or someone who's alive should already be dead, right? So that's kind of where we are with this in the last reel of this movie. So I appreciated that, whether it was intentional or not, I have no idea. I'm going to give him credit and say it was intentional. So,
well, I think they did a good job though too, of when she said, "Well, maybe it'll be two killers like in Scream." Oh wait, you haven't seen it yet because it hasn't come out, and I'm like, "Oh my God, did you? I mean, I kind of figured it would be. I'm like, wow, are they signposting again?" But you're right. It wasn't. It's two killers, but she's not a horror nerd, right? So the reference there is, I'm not a horror nerd because everyone's seen Scream, right?
And Back to the Future.
And yes, and Back to the Future. And it was really cool that they watched RoboCop because I love they show the scene where he gets annihilated with the gun, which is one of my favorite scenes.
Everybody loves that scene in RoboCop.
Right.
Everybody
when it gets cut. I love the uncut version where he did the bullets just keep riddling the body. Anyway, what I'm saying is, but by having her not be a horror nerd and knowing all the horror tropes and knowing how to fix horror, like she didn't do all those things. You know what I'm saying? But, and I mean, they did little things that make a lot of sense. She's been training her, like since she's been 7 years old with self-defense. So she knows how to take care of herself. Like you can see that when they're young, the mom and dad are just the teenagers fighting. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. Right. But she does. That's what they said. How'd you learn how to do that? Like, because no one in the 80s knew how to do that shit. No one trained MMA or did anything. No, there was no MMA.
Yeah, it didn't exist. Yeah.
You trained, maybe you went to like karate class, like you're Barry Goldberg, you know, kind of nunchucking yourself, you know. but I'm saying, but there was no like, well, I've been training MMA or I've been doing this. No one did fucking CrossFit didn't exist. Like, American Ninja didn't exist. A lot of shit didn't exist. So,
excuse me, American Ninja did exist. It just wasn't a competition. It was just a movie. Okay.
Okay. Right. But like, not American Ninja. You know what I'm talking about.
I know that. I couldn't let that go, man.
Yeah. But wait, but 87. Was American Ninja out by 87?
Let's see what Mother Box says.
I'm just saying, American
Ninja 1985.
Okay, it was. Okay, sorry. I stand corrected. Yeah. Well, I'm saying it, but American Ninja
with my favorite and yours, Dudikoff in the title role.
I actually like the what he called Dominion better. The 2 or 3 where it's the woman and she gets possessed by the his spirit possesses her and she now has the ability to fight all these people off. I gotta look
let's see. So I've not seen that one. I go because it's American Ninja, American Ninja 2, The Confrontation, American Ninja 3, Blood Hunt, American Ninja 4, The Annihilation, not to be confused with Warlock, The Armageddon, and American Ninja 5. So with none of which seem to... I don't know. I did watch Avenging Force, which is also a Dudikoff. It's like the Uno switch card of 80s action movies. If you ever get a chance to watch Avenging Force, that's like the instead of every like, you know, right wing macho fantasy that is the 80s action movie. That's like a left wing macho fantasy. And I swear to God, I'm not making that up. So unfortunately, Dudikoff not in this movie.
No,
it would have been a very different movie at that
point. Oh, no, anyway. It's just called Ninja 3, The Domination. Ninja, not American Ninja.
Extra for that kind of action, though.
No, Ninja 3: The Domination, and it look if you okay. So, folks, if you have never seen, I know we're off topic here. If you've never seen Ninja 3: The Domination, you don't need to see Ninja 1 or Ninja 2 to appreciate Ninja 3. It is, oh boy, it is something else. And currently only $11.99 on Amazon. Although Revenge of the Ninja, it's another good one. Like all those things.
Because it's Enter the Ninja and Revenge of the Ninja are the two ones that come before it.
Yes. Those are a little more expensive. But you don't need to see those to really appreciate. But don't worry, Enter the Ninja, who's one of the main stars in it? Franco Nero. Yes, that's right. Django himself.
Wow.
The real Django.
The real, not the fake one, anyway.
No, although I do like the new Django. It's very good, anyway. So, but yeah, this is worth your time to go check out, folks. It's readily available. Usually I'm telling you where to go track it down on Blu-ray or DVD or something. Just right on Prime Video. You know, if you have Prime shipping, you already have Prime Video. Even if you didn't know you did Prime Video, look at that. You know, hopefully that's not what you learned today, though. So,
it's like, honey, we got the Prime Video. How the hell did that happen?
Put my good teeth in. So that's horrible.
Lord, save us from Amazon and the savings that they deliver.
Oh, good God. Oh,
they send them drones to spy on us.
And on the slasher tip, I've got a little glow. I went to, it's getting winter time here and I have no winter clothes. So I went to get some long underwear at the Under Armour store down the street from me and, couldn't find any. So, and this is going back to some 80s. We still have next, I don't know if you guys had them where you live, but they were sort of everywhere in the 80s. TJ Maxx.
Right next door is usually a Marshalls.
There's a TJ Maxx. There used to be a Marshalls there, but the Marshalls is gone now. But
they're owned by the same.
This TJ Maxx used to be above a Bed Bath & Beyond, and the Bed Bath & Beyond is gone and was now a like Halloween store. You know, but so I was like, oh, I can go to TJ Maxx. They'll have I might get it cheap there, and I got it cheap. But right next to the long underwear, they had winter hats, and I'm like, oh, I'll grab an extra winter hat. I wonder if they've got anything that's any good. And then they had like a whole bin of $5 winter hats, and I'm digging through it. And oh, there's one, a branded Friday the 13th one with a little patch of the Jason's hockey mask on it, and just a toque, just a toque with a little hockey mask on it. And I'm like, all right, $5. There we go. Sold. I get it home and I'm opening it up. Nothing on the package says this. It's just, you know, Friday the 13th hat, you know, there's two hats. I've got one with the Jason mask. And then I've got one that just says Friday the 13th on it. And I'm like, ooh, now I have a hat that I will only wear on Friday the 13th. And I can wear the hockey mask all the time. But I thought that was really cool for $5. I got but it's very, you know, I couldn't believe in the packaging. It wasn't like two hats or bonus hat or anything like that. It was, how many of them would you sell for two of those for $5?
Now I'm super jealous. I wouldn't 100% wear those things, especially since I'm the guy who's got Friday the 13th stuff tattooed on him. So
it's nice. It's not super. It's very subtle. But like, and now I can, and like when people are like, "Oh, why do you got a hockey mask on?" I can go like this. This is my sports. This is sports to me.
Oh boy! So
super jealous.
Anyway, yeah. I am very jelly now. I would love Friday the 13th test, but anyway.
If I get back there in the next couple of days, I'll see if they have any more. And I'll you know, you can't go wrong. I'll buy them all up.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying. So, anyway, but yeah, like I said, folks, check it out. It's you know, even if you're not a huge slasher movie fan or you know whatever kind of thing, it's just a fun movie too. That's the other thing too. It's had some, like, again, we're talking about people getting eviscerated at some points, but like, not like, it's not that bad. I mean, you know, you're like, oh, that person gets stabbed to death 16 times. Like, yeah, but it's not like, you know,
You live through the 80s, then it's also, it would be worth watching, you know, even if you're not into like comedies or slashers, it's one of the better movies of portraying the 80s. Like, if you're into set design and stuff like that, this one's really good.
Yeah. It's worth checking out. I think if you listen to this show, you'll get a kick out of it. You'll laugh. You'll be amused by it.
Our town had the quantum drop. It was called the Cyclotron.
Yeah.
And they always played ELO Fire on High. Even like when she's going to the bathroom and she's got the plunger with the key on in her hand, I'm like, oh wait, we didn't have a plunger. We had a whole toilet seat, but same idea, you know?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. But I'm saying, but those are the kind of things that like,
little see, nowadays,
like, yeah, nowadays you have like an e-hall pass. You have to like, you sign out like with digitally to, you know, go to the bathroom and come back digitally because we can't allow you to have anything go in and out of the bathroom like that. But yeah,
well, do you also have to go digitally?
I don't know. Kids only pay for the bathroom.
I think that's still an analog process, isn't it?
But I'm saying they don't even use the bathroom when they go there. They just go there and like vape and play on their phone.
You ever seen the Ripping Friends, the John Chris Felucci Saturday morning cartoon?
I do remember.
They had a future cat that had a quantum portal over its butt so that when it pooped, it dropped out of the portal into its litter box. Saturday morning, 10 a.m. on network TV. Those were good days.
Yeah. So.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Spock sabotaged the system.